Hey guys, welcome to the Martial and Healing Arts channel. I'm Rafe Kelly, founder of Evolve Move Play. I'm extremely excited to be sponsoring this channel. Martial and Healing Arts have been key aspects of embodiment and self-cultivation for thousands of years. I have some of my best friends in the industry, Rory Miller, Matt Thornton, Edward Hines, presenting here, and I'm really excited to share what they have to say with you guys. You're gonna love it. So Evolve Move Play is an ecology of practices of movement, mindfulness, nature connection, and community. And within the movement, we have a big emphasis on moving in nature and being able to do parkour. We also like to lift weights and throw things around, but there's a huge aspect of martial arts, and I've been training martial arts since I was 6 years old. So it's really exciting to be able to sponsor this channel in particular. If you're interested in my work, check out my talks on the Main Stage and the Movement Anatomy channel. If you can't get to either of those live, you can check us out at Rafe Kelly on Instagram, get all your awesome embodiment giveaways, and for now, just enjoy this amazing channel. It's gonna be an awesome show.
And Richard, moving to you, just a couple of words to introduce you. So you are a trauma therapist and you are a five element acupuncturist, and you've been studying and teaching internationally zero balancing for last 30 years. And you also work with scouts to help them how to navigate and find themselves in the mountains. So that's also great. I think it's a great life skill. So the floor is yours.
Thank you. Yes, so I'm Richard Walters, and I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. It's a delight to be seeing myself mainly in the view here. So let me change the gallery so I can see you guys. That's nice. So I want to talk about trauma today, and I want to talk about trauma in specifically in relation to body work and specifically zero balancing. But I'd like to start with trauma because that's the root of it for all of us, I think. When we think of trauma, we might think of the trauma to the body that's so common in car accidents and falling off bicycles. And that word is used in various different ways. So we can think about trauma in relation to blows and impacts to our body. These are things we remember. And then there's trauma, which is so much about the emotional traumas we remember, the shocks, the sudden bereavements, the childhood experiences we've had over the years, which have maybe been pretty awful for us. And this is another level of trauma. But today I'm really wanting to look at the earlier traumas that come before we have memory. So pre-2 year old, we don't really have any cognizance in our system. Everything's held in our bones, in our tissues, in our body. So our body holds the memory. And I'm just thinking of Bessel van der Kolk's book, which I can see here, The Body Keeps the Score, which is a great book on in relation to this. And so when we're looking at our memory, we can only remember so far back. So we may deal with our traumas that we can remember, but there's all this other trauma which is held in the body, which predates that and actually is the foundations of the later trauma. So why are we driving that car so crazily? Why are we finding ourselves in risky situations? What's happened to our boundaries that issues happen in our childhoods? And these questions are related to the early childhood experiences. So if you think back to conception, there we are in our, it's just coming together, the first two cells and then the first four cells and then the eights and then the 16s and then up and up and up and up, that sudden burst of life. And that consciousness finds itself in the womb, inside another's energy field, inside another's emotional field. And so there we are forming, and immediately, if we're a surprise pregnancy, which isn't wanted, we get this sense of not being wanted. Or if we're germinating and forming into a boy's body or a girl's body and we're wanted for the opposite sex, so we're in a society where the male is wanted and the female isn't, then we've got conflict happening immediately, even at that very early stage, 4 weeks, 8 weeks. Or let's say that the mother is conflicted about the pregnancy, but within a few weeks or a few months comes to really want it, those early impressions are still there. So we may think in our heads, we were wanted, and our mother may have this story of, you were wanted, I wanted you and I loved you all your life. But there may be that conflict deep in ourselves that contradicts that. And so we're left with this confusion in our system. Dr. Franz Rupert is a great psychologist from Munich University who's developed identity-orientated psychotrauma therapy, which is a bit of a mouthful, so we call it IOPT. And he talks about these early life traumas, and he talks about the trauma biography. So he says the first trauma is the trauma where we are no longer able to be ourselves. So our mother wants us as a girl and we're actually a boy, or our mother wants us as a girl, the other way around, whatever that one was. And so we're split. We're split between being ourselves and being what our mother wants. If our mother wants us as a girl and we're a boy, then will she love us? And if we are not going to be loved as how we are, then we have to become what our mother wants. If we're not wanted as a baby at all, and you know, maybe attempted abortion, an early childhood trauma, then we may decide to live as little as possible and to die as much as possible in order to please our mothers. And so we end up living our lives on this knife edge of living as little as possible and dying as much as possible at the most extreme level. And we live that all the way through our 30s and 40s and 50s, just living on a thread of existence. And this informs every choice we make in our lives, and maybe informs the risks we take in our lives. So as we realize this, then we have to give up our identity for what is wanted by another. And so we start to develop certain pleasing techniques, certain charming techniques. We lose ourselves. We lose what the sense of I am and what do I want? Who am I and what do I want? Those primary questions in life. So this is the trauma of identity, and underlies everything. You can imagine that as you get into that, it's like, if I'm not sure who I am, if I've given up on who I am, then what's happened to my boundaries? How do I say a healthy no when I don't know what I want? How do I say a healthy no when I'm not getting what I need? We move to the next level, the trauma of love. The trauma of love is the realization that all babies are just born with the ability to love. They want to love and they want to be loved. It's not just that they want to be loved, they also want to love. And if we assume that we're living in a traumatizing society, Professor Franz Rupert's new book is Who Am I in a Traumatizing Society? Everything about our society, if you think back to the First World War, millions of people died, which means million people were bereaved. Millions of children were left without a father or a mother. Second World War, bombings, the whole of our countries were affected. So this trauma isn't just happening to us as an individual, it's happening in society. So our mothers, whoever our mothers are, however they are traumatized. And I, as a parent, I'm traumatized by my own life, but also by the effect of my mother's life. She was traumatized. My grandmother, she was traumatized. My great-grandmother, she was traumatized. We can go back generations. This transgenerational trauma leads to a place where we're born into, where our mothers are not necessarily able to love us in a healthy way. So our output of love is maybe not received, and the input of love is not really satisfactory for us. It doesn't nourish us. So we have the trauma of love. And from the trauma of love, we begin to get it turned around, so that we begin to think, if they're happy, I'm happy. So our happiness depends on somebody else's happiness. If we can make our mother happy, then we'll get some love back. We'll get nourished. If our mother's unhappy, depressed, unhappy in the marriage, unhappy in herself, she's had traumatic events in her life inevitably, and she was probably born into a traumatic family, then, or a traumatized family, or a traumatizing family, all those different aspects of it, then here we are existing in that environment. And so we go from the trauma of identity through to the trauma of love. And with those two, the loss of boundaries in the trauma of identity, who am I? Am I myself, or do I have to become like my mother? Do I have to become like my father? We begin to sacrifice our identity for another. Then we move to the trauma of love, and we begin to get confused about what love is. And so then comes the trauma of sexuality. So then we become, any kind of touch is better than none. If I'm being cuddled in a slightly inappropriate way, is that better than being living in tightly, in total isolation? If I'm being touched inappropriately, is that okay? If I'm being looked at and adored and lusted after, is that better than not being looked at, being ignored totally? And so our boundaries get confused, our acceptance of touch gets confused, our ability to say no gets confused, our ability to speak up and go and seek help gets confused. And all this combines into the trauma of sexuality at any level of trauma that we may have received. And we know how much there is of that in our society. We've seen it in recent years with the Me Too. We've seen it in recent years with child abuse throughout society. We've seen it in the number of women and men who've been abused. It's a phenomenal number, sexually abused, physically abused, mentally abused, emotionally abused. So here we are, 8 weeks into being a fetus, and all this is going on. This has happened to our mothers, and we're embedded inside our mother. We're in a total environment of her womb, where that's our experience of existence. We're beginning to lay down tissues. We're beginning to lay down bone from 8 weeks. So I want to talk a bit about the body. So here we are, we're laying down bone, and our experience of trauma is already there. It's our mother's trauma, and it becomes our trauma. And as we lay it down, it gets lodged in the soft tissues. There's no conscious memory, but the body remembers. So our trauma is held in our bodies. It's held in our soft tissues, it's held in our bones. And in Zero Balancing, the body work that we're talking about, we begin to look at, well, what's going on in the soft tissues? What happens in our soft tissues? In our soft tissues, we can look at the emotions that we feel, the anger and the grief and the frustration and the joy and so forth. And that's kind of like how we're feeling right now, how we are. But if we come down to the bone level, we begin to look at who we are. So working at bone level takes us down from the soft tissue feelings of how we are into more of that identity. We get more access to who we are and what do we want. But we know that that's already been compromised in the trauma of identity. So Dr. Fritz Smith, who is the originator of Zero Balancing, was an osteopath initially, and then due to law changes in California, he had to become an MD, a doctor, in the 60s. And he started studying, he studied with Ida Rolfe, and he studied, then he went on to study acupuncture with Dr. J.R. Worsley in England. And he, in studying acupuncture, he was looking at energy. And you remember back in the 60s and early 70s, this whole concept of energy was so small and so limited, and California was very narrow-minded and you had to be cautious. So these were new ideas then. And so the idea that there was this stuff called energy, that we could work with things like acupuncture, was very unknown at that time. And so he began thinking, well, if there's this energy flowing through the soft tissue meridians that looks at emotions and looks at the meridian energy, what's going on in the bone? He's an osteopath, he's interested in bone. What's going on in bone energy? He studied with Swami Muktananda, looking at the Ayurvedic system, and got really interested in, well, there's the Ida and the Pingala, the Sushumna, the raising of the Kundalini, but how do we evaluate that? He's a clinician, he works with his hands all the time. So he starts looking at the joints, he starts looking at bone and how to touch bone. So I'd like you to join me for a moment, and I'll just move back a bit so you can see me more clearly. And shift that down. So just join me with your somewhere on your leg here where you can touch quite easily. And you can feel the material of cloth or skin on your upper, just above your knee here. And you can just touch that. You can bounce into the muscle if you want and feel that. And then I want you to go slowly, slowly in. And you can probably feel that you just continue going on in and in and in. And in. More pressure you in, go in, the deeper it goes. So release that. And this time just go straight to the bone. And you'll feel it bounce back coming to meet you. So touching the bone, connecting to the bone, and come back out again. Come in, press to the bone, and come out again. So we can touch bone, and you can touch that lighter and lighter and still feel the bone coming back to meet you. So you don't need to press hard to touch bone. You can do it here on the ribs here. And as you palpate around your own ribs, you can find the bone there. Not a lot of people get to touch their skeletons, get to know their skeletons. We tend to know our soft tissues because that's where all our feelings happen. So when we come to bone, it's a whole new territory for our consciousness. So awakening that in our systems, getting to know our identity, is a brilliant thing to do. So palpate around until you find something. If you palpate just a little bit deeper and slower, you might find a little tender spot. I found one just here on me. It might be further out here. It might be further down here. Just stay on the upper chest. Nice, simple area. Quite charged in some people. Find a point and just touch to the bone and hold it. Just take a moment being with your own bone. And you'll feel the experience of on the outside is just a pressing onto the bone. But the experience inside is something different. It's a sense of shift or release or movement or discomfort, many different things going on. So that zero balancing is to the outside looks like a series of stretches and held pressure at the bone level. But from the inside, it's completely different. It touches at us at a completely different level. And really, it is all about touch. We are born coming out of the womb immediately. The ideal thing is to be put on our mother's chest straight into skin-to-skin touch. We then go on from being touched and having our toes wiggled and having our eyes stroked and having our back tickled, and touch becomes an intimate and wonderful aspect of love, ideally. So it's all about touch, and touch can become very distorted as well. So when we're traumatized, we can become very mistrustful of our bodies. Whose body is it? What's it? What are all these various messages? I'm having to sacrifice myself for other people all the time. I'm making myself do that, or it's being forced on me. So this distrust of the body means that when we're touched, we can become very distrustful of touch. We've had sexual abuse or physical abuse, or if we're in deep pain, then that level of touch can be very disturbing. So how can we find a way in trauma work of handling when touch in itself can be very traumatizing? In Zero Balancing, we use four simple categories of touch, just for the sake of this discussion, really. If you think of that fetus inside the womb again, it's completely inside its mother's energy field. Their energy fields are totally intermingled. And in Zero Balancing, we call this blending, where our energy and another's energy is completely intermingled. And so I'd like you just to wrap around your hands like this. Let them rest down somewhere and carry on listening to me for a minute while you do that. And in blending, our energy and another's energy become mixed up. It's really nice. We cuddle in with somebody, we hold hands, we're in bed, we're making love. Our energy and their energy are blended. The baby crawls into its mother's arms and wants to be totally wrapped around again. We may spend a lot of our life trying to find people to blend with. And if you just feel your hands now, you may be aware that you're not really aware where your left hand is and your right hand is, where one begins and the other ends. They've just become blended with each other. This is a sense of what it feels like to blend with another. This is what blending feels like. It's easier to do it with another person because then you've got a sense of them and me and how weird it feels to have that connection melted or how nice it feels. This is great. It feels wonderful. I love it with my wife and my children. Blending is wonderful. But it's not an ideal therapeutic environment to be in because we don't have a sense of who we are. And what we're talking about here is identity, regaining a sense of self, regaining boundaries. So just let this one go with a little squeeze so that you are back to yourself. And we're blended with ourselves all the time. I'm resting my hands on my knees and I'm not aware where my hand ends and my leg begins. We can also stream. So if you have a look at this one where you take your dominant hand, whether it be left or right, and just wrap it around your other hand. And just imagine energy flowing down your dominant hand arm, down your right arm, down your left arm, whichever one you're using. And just imagine a flow of energy. Start to begin to feel like a river flowing down your arm. You can imagine that. And it feels different from blending. If you do this with somebody else, then quite often when I do it, I feel myself deflating slightly as the energy is flowing out of me. And the person I'm with may have an experience of heating up or expanding, or if somebody's streaming into me, my spine begins to straighten, all sorts of expansion begins to happen. And, you know, this might feel really nice for our clients. There they are, they're getting energy put into them. But as practitioners, we can feel drained at the end of the day because we've just put our energy into another person. And of course, any river that's flowing also has silt flowing with it. So our issues, our pasts, our traumas, our silt may flow into our clients as well. So streaming is not a good therapeutic form of touch. We can go through channeling, for example, spiritual healing, where we can connect to the all that is, the source, the great spirit, God, whatever term you might use for that universal energy field, whatever fits with your worldview. And we can channel that through us, and that's brilliant. We can step out of the way, then energy flows through, and it's very beautiful. We have to watch out for the silt again, so we have to make sure we get ourselves out of a way, otherwise we can have therapeutic overload. And not a good idea. But in Zero Balancing, we use a form of touch called interface. This is where I end and you begin becomes clarified. Our boundaries become clarified. And you can do this with yourself. Again, just wrap around in one hand. And this time, just bring a little bit of nestle to it. So you're really just really getting wrapped around one hand. One hand is lying there passive, in this case, my left hand. And the other one's more active. It's coming down to the bone level gently. And as we hold that, we become aware, where does my dominant hand here, my right hand or my left hand, end? And where does the other hand begin? We're paying attention to the one hand because it's easier that way. Just notice what happens to you. As you hold that, bring your consciousness repeatedly back to it. Where do I end? In my right hand. At the bone level, bones of your fingers to the bones of the other hand. And hopefully you're noticing that this is a different experience to blending. There might be a different sense in yourself. I'm feeling a sense of clarity, and I'm feeling a sense of pulse. I'm feeling a sense of stability myself, and you'll have all your own different words for that. When you practice this with somebody else, again, it comes to a different level, and you can practice it like that, leaning back against each other in a nice fingertip to fingertip one when you're working with somebody else. So these four forms of touch are really lovely to experience and work with. And they, when you combine them with yourself, So trauma is so much about somebody else wanting something else from us. Our mothers want us to be good. They want us to be quiet. They want us to be well-behaved. They want us to be smart. Our parents, our fathers also. And that's not necessarily what we are or what we want to be. Somebody wants touch from us. Somebody wants inappropriate use of our bodies. All these things are other people's wants. So when you have somebody who comes to you wanting nothing of you, and as a therapist, as a client, as a practitioner, as a trauma therapist, we need to be very careful that our needs of our clients are put aside. Our need for them to get better, our need for them to be something specifically different, our idealized view of what healing looks like, that physical illness goes away. You know, our success as a practitioner is attached to healing that bad knee or getting rid of that irritable bowel syndrome or helping somebody lead a different life. That's our attachment. It's not necessarily our client's attachment. And putting that all aside allows the client to become themselves and find themselves, find their own identity. Who am I and what do I want? So this unconditional presence, this unconditional touch, holding somebody in the highest personal regard is an essential part of touch. I'd like you to, for a moment, to think about something recent that has triggered you. A mildly unpleasant experience with somebody, perhaps. I wouldn't go into anything too deep, any big old traumas that have been overwhelming you. Just think of a trigger, a run-in you had with somebody that was kind of difficult. Bring up that feeling in your body if you choose to. If you don't want to do it, just sit back and listen to me. But if you choose to do that, just let that feeling in your body be there a minute. Feel how it feels. It doesn't have to be that recent. Allow that feeling to develop in your body and feel how it feels like. And then let that go a moment. Just return back to the present. Shake it out a little bit. Yeah, Marta, that's really great. A little reminder that we're moving our bodies really helps those tensions shift. And then come to your hand again. Wrap around. I'm going to go the other way because I can get my, if I've got my fingertips on the back of my hand, I can feel bone more easily. So I'm coming to bone, I'm coming to interface. I'm knowing where my right hand for me comes to an end. Bringing attention there, nestled round, wrapping round, and kindness, unconditionality in my hand, softness and warmth to myself. Now, while you hold this, return to that memory. I want you to oscillate between the memory, let the memory build, and then come back to your interface. It's a bit like driving. We're looking at the motorway, and then we're looking at the wing mirrors, and then we're looking at the speedometer, and we're back on the motorway again. You can have that split attention. Have that memory come back to your hand. Have the body felt sensation come back to your hand. If it's too much, just let go, stop doing it. Come back to the present and shake your body out. Come back to your hand. Come back to the memory. And then disconnect. Again, shake out your body, breathe, let the oxygen move through your system a bit. Yes, a few stretches going on there. That's nice, Harry and Holly. Paul, that's really nice to see you moving. So working with trauma on one's own can be so overwhelming, can be so lonely. When we're being held with an unconditional touch, we've got an experience of two opposites going on. We've got the experience of safety in the touch. That interface with unconditional positive regard can be found to be extremely safe. Not always, but most of the time for most of us. And then we're at the same time, we're moving into really not so pleasant, unsafe feelings, things that feel unsafe to us. So experiencing opposites is what we experience in lots of meditative forms, for example, where we're looking at movement and stillness, a movement of candle flame, but our attention is on a single pointed thing. We're looking at pain and pleasure. So we're having our bones touched and it's touching something really sore, but oh my God, that feels good to have it touched. We've got a feeling of pleasure from having soreness touched. And since our brains are binary systems, we're living all the time in this and that. Should I have strawberry ice cream or chocolate ice cream? Should I go to the Bahamas or should I go to the Maldives? Should I go to bed or should I stay up and watch this movie? It's all about choices. It's the yin and yang world. It's a masculine and feminine world. It's sun and moon world. But when we hold these points of stillness where those contradictory things are held simultaneously, we get both, we have our cake and eat it too, then we have that opportunity. Our brain just goes, oh, I can't do that in my binary thinking. And we drop out into altered states of consciousness. And the great thing about altered states of consciousness is we are less attached to who we think we are. We're less attached to old tapes. We're less attached to attributions, who we've been told we are. You're stupid, you're smart, you're beautiful, you're ugly. Even your name, you're Richard. That's an attribution. It's something, not something I chose. It was put upon me. So these attributions, we're less attached to them when we're in an altered state of consciousness. And so we can begin to, while we're being held with this loving kindness touch at interface, no demands being made of us, no boundaries being crossed, we have much greater chance of letting go, of freeing up. So body work for me is an essential part of working with trauma. I wanted to say something else about trauma then. The nature of trauma is that it terrifies us that we are going to cease to exist. It's an existential trauma. So either we're having a terrible car accident, we think it's going to kill us, or we are being abused and that intense feeling in our body of shame, disgust, and awfulness of it, the terror of it, tears us apart on an emotional level, and we think we will cease to exist in our psyche. Or we're in the womb and we're unacceptable, we're unwanted, we are experiencing an attempted abortion, or experiencing of not being wanted and the fear of, will I be able to implant into this womb wall? Will it accept me? Or will I be treated as an unacceptable egg and the mother's immune system will reject me? Will that not happen? All these things are existential experiences. So to start to work on one's trauma, to start to work on one's existence, to start to work on one's trauma is to ask ourselves to approach death. And who's going to do that? I'm not going to do that. You're not going to do that. No hope of going there. It's like saying, okay, here's a huge cliff. Step off it. We need to have something there that is reassuring enough that we can look around the corner at this terrifying experience, which we think our body knows that nearly killed us before. So why would we ever go there again? We'll develop any number of survival strategies to avoid going there. We'll smoke ourselves to death. We'll drink huge amounts of alcohol. We'll drive our cars at stupid, we'll jump out of airplanes. We'll do bungee jumps. We'll eat to try and smother it. We'll get ourselves numbed out with drugs and alcohol and sex and anything to avoid feeling that thing. So what we need then is to find a part of ourselves which will hold us, which will give us some stability. And the route to that, in my opinion, is to find someone who will help us on that journey. And having touch, having body work, having the presence of a good trauma therapist, the visual touch, the emotional touch, the unconditional love, I was watching Gabor Mate the other day, just working very early on in this conference. It was just so beautiful, his presence and kindness. And every time that Mark got a little bit too wobbly, he'd just pull back. And that kindness, as my good friend Paul Kern was talking, he was talking the other day on this conference, he was talking about kindness and how important that is. Not only kindness to others, but kindness to ourselves. How important is that? To all our traumatized parts and to all our perpetrating parts. The trauma of identity and the trauma of love lead to the trauma of sexuality. That's the kind of triad of trauma. But after that becomes the trauma of becoming a perpetrator. When we are in so much pain and it becomes unbearable to hold it, it can overflow into bouts of rage and anger, into inappropriate words and inappropriate emotional behavior with someone else. And we realize that we are becoming a perpetrator. We've been perpetrated against in the trauma of sexuality and the trauma of love and the trauma of identity. But as a result of that, we very often then come into being a perpetrator ourselves, and we become exposed to more perpetration at the same time. And that shame that affects us so deeply means that it's even more difficult to do our internal work, to bring these things out, because it's so shaming to be a perpetrator as well as having been perpetrated against. We're victim and perpetrator simultaneously. And so that's where this, the presence of whoever we're working here with, whoever we're sitting with, whoever our friends are, whoever our partners are, these presences help us gradually realize that we are acceptable, even with our history and our shame. But zero balancing is not just about trauma. It's also about wellness. So we also have this wellspring of love inside us that we are infinitely connected to. We have this wellspring of joy inside us as human beings. As I said earlier, a baby is born with the infinite ability to love. So in zero balancing, as we touch, and we've had perhaps inappropriate touch, or we've got physical pain in our body all over, and our whole lives have become about physical pain, and suddenly somebody touches us at the level where it feels good, at the level where it may hurt good, but it also feels good. We call that hedonic touch. Then this can generate sense of wellness in us. As we connect to ourselves and feel our bone energy, our identity, feel the spirit flowing through our system. I was talking to one of my colleagues this week, and she said, zero balancing for me is not about trauma at all. It's not what I work with. I don't do that stuff. But she said, I do a lot of spiritual work. I belong to a spiritual group. I work with this stuff in myself all the time. It helps me process stuff as well. But that's not what I use zero balancing for. For me, zero balancing is about grounding my spiritual body into my physical body. It's about accessing the high vibrational fields and allowing them to echo down through her bones. So when we touch bone, we're not only touching bone trauma, we're also touching bone wellness. And if you think of a thin wire that carries a small current to charge our phone, for example, compared to the huge wires that bring the electricity into a city, you know, massive great wires. That's the difference between our soft tissue and our spine, for example. You think about soft tissue, if you tap it, it doesn't ring and resonate, it just absorbs. Whereas if you tap your bones, your knuckle, for example, it's like ringing chimes, it's like ringing a bell, it echoes through the whole body. The bone is so dense that it allows these finer currents, the Ida, Pingala, Sushumna, the Kundalini, to flow through it. So we also, by enlivening the bone system and the joint system, where energy moves from one bone to the next, we allow these energy flows to develop. So Zero balancing is this wonderful system which allows bone trauma to release and this more fine, delightful energy of wellness, of vitality, of spirit to flow through our bodies. When we're working with zero balancing, we can hold energy in stillness and allow the person to move around us. So we act as an anchor, allowing the person to move into the stuff they want to work with or the soft tissue tension they want to let go of. But we're always just meeting them. So if this is a client's body, I'm touching up and just lifting and waiting. I'm not pushing it to become something I want it to be. I'm not manipulating a joint, which my chiropractic works on my back from time to time, and that's great to shift me back into position. But I keep on pulling myself out because of all the winds of emotion in my body that pull me out of shape. You've ever seen those trees on the cliffs, which are bent over by a constant wind? I kind of see that's how our bodies are. I'm bent by the constant winds of my emotional history. And what was I talking about? I've lost that one completely. We meet somebody where they are. Here they are in their tension, and we wait. And if they're ready to, their body will then let go onto the still point we're offering. So that muscle tension, that bone tension, that joint tension lets go. And if you're palpating your chest like where you were earlier, you'll feel how bone can hold tension. Some of these places have gone numb. Some of these places have gone cold and still. And working with depression, working with coldness is much more difficult than working with fiery and alive stuff, vital and moving stuff. So in zero balancing, we can amplify by a certain degree of focus on a point, by bringing more presence and attention to it. We can amplify the energy so it begins to warm up in that area. We can also contain it, like putting a pressure cooker lid on, so it begins to cook faster. We call this the alchemy of touch, where that amplification and containment allows things to cook faster. This is an advanced course in zero balancing because we then have to balance that all the time with taking our intention out of it, with taking our wanting to make the person let go out of it. It's always just about providing a place where the client can use this or choose not to, can look at this tough bit in their life or choose not to. That choice is the place where our trauma lies. That choice and being able to make that choice for ourselves. All we want is to make choices. But most of the time we don't know what we want because we've lost that sense of identity way back. How do you do zero balancing on your own? I'm just running up to quarter two, I see. So I just want to talk a little bit, how do you do zero balancing to yourself on your own? If you're stuck in isolation, here we are locked down in various places in the world, in Wales at the moment, in the UK, fully locked down. Again, hi Sue, wherever you are. We can't work on our own bodies in this way, but what we can do is breathe. So zero balancing works with clearer, stronger fields of energy. And there's a lovely meditation called the parallel breath meditation, where you can breathe from your toes up to the top of your head. And just as I'm talking, you can just do this. And you're just breathing parallel lines through your body like you're combing your hair. All the tangles in your body, as you breathe out, you breathe down to your feet or the other way around as you choose, breathing up to the top of your head. It's a bit like the weeds and the grass in a river all lines up with the flow of the river. So as we breathe up, the river flows up. And as we breathe down, the river flows down. And we feel it moving through our soft tissues. We feel it breathing through our bones all the way up and all the way down. And my gift to you for this conference is that on my website, there is a free download of this meditation. It's 6-7 minutes long. You can pop it on your phone so you can listen to it anywhere. You can pop it in your laptops and take it wherever you like, and it's yours for life. And the more you practice it when you're well, when you're relatively stable, the more useful it becomes when you're really discombobulated. Isn't that a great word? When you're all disturbed, upset, feeling awkward, feeling embarrassed, feeling angry, just having practiced this number of times, you can just be sitting in the car having left home and just saying, and as you breathe, as you're driving along with your eyes open, you've just got that breathing up and down. Thank you, it's just come up on screen. richardwalters.org is the website, my website, and you'll find it on the home page and you'll find it on the meditation page as well. And I really recommend giving it a go and practicing it repeatedly when you're well and happy and at ease, so that it's there as a tool when you're not. So we got about 8 minutes or something. Somebody's asking, what is your site? My site is just my personal therapy site. It just tells you what I do. And I'm down in Exeter, down in the southwest of England. I do lots of online sessions, so I can work on Zoom with trauma work. And I can work on Zoom with meditation. And I've been doing that throughout lockdown with my clients. So I can work. I've worked with people in Hong Kong and in Saudi Arabia. And I'm available on that level too. Just contact me. My email and everything is on there. So Marta, are there any questions running through?
Yes, there are. We have a few questions. So I can just read to you the first one. So it's a question from Penny. And she's asking if there are areas of bone that often hold certain traumas in the ribs, would they generally tend to hold grief? That's acupuncture, meridian or lung?
Yes, it's important not to become attached to where anything might be whole. So we might think that the lower ribs here, down in the lower ribs, might hold childhood trauma because of that shock, that the diaphragm might get locked in that shock syndrome of, and we've taken that deep breath in, but we never let it go because it's too dangerous to let go into the scream that was attached to that deep breath in. Or we might think that our pelvis, as my great teacher, Dr. Fritz Smith, I've studied with him for 30 years, and he says, there's no one out there who doesn't have an issue about peeing, pooing, and sex. So down in our pelvis, of course, we've got all those functions going on. And so the shame attached to peeing inappropriately, wetting our beds, or pooing and nappy training, and it's disgusting and all that. Sex with all the issues in our society, the Victorian issues with abuse. So we might think our pelvis and our sacroiliac joint, but it's not just there. That may be there, but it may also be in our heart. It may be in the grief. It may be in our knees. It may be pushed as far away from our heart as possible, down into our left foot. So to get attached to any one area, being linked to any one issue, it's more about just, where is it? We have that inquiry. We have that curiosity in our hands. We have that curiosity in our exploration of our bodies. And in the identity-orientated psychotrauma therapy work, we use a sentence of intention as a way of, we can ask, where is my trauma, or why is my knee like this? And out of that session comes a really clear image of what triggered that physical illness. I also do a meditation where we can explore, we can find the representative of a certain illness and have a chat with them, which I find is a really lovely meditation, which is in one of my CDs, which are also on my website, funnily enough. Another question.
Okay, so there is a question today. I somehow feel it's related with this one, because you were talking about very profound work, like touching and regaining our sense of identity. And there is a question if you can do this work without touching with survivors of violence, strengthening the sense of identity without touching.
Zero balancing is a touch body work. It's a bone energy body work. So if we're talking about zero balancing, then that's what we do. But there are many ways of working with identity. I mean, the identity orientated psychotrauma therapy is specifically designed of working with identity, victims of trauma, victims of perpetration, victims of loss of identity, of the trauma of love, all those different levels. It's specifically what we work with. And there are therapists all over the world. There are therapists like me working online with it. And there are courses, there are, we do it as group work, we do it as one-to-one work. There's a conference going on in Munich right now online, where multiple practitioners are studying it and working with it. And of course, there are other, many other methods with Van der Kolk and with family constellations and with Gabor Mate. But in Zero Balancing, it's a hands-on work. Parallel breath meditation is a brilliant way of working on it on yourself.
Probably it's a little bit connected. This is how I feel it, that sometimes we think the touch may be too much. So it's like, oh, how to, you know, recognize that somebody is already, that you can start this work or it needs some easing into it probably. So this is how I also understand the question. But there is also another one. We still have time for it. In the womb, what if the mom doesn't know she's pregnant? What imprinting happens then? Is the baby less impacted? Some people can go through months of pregnancy without knowledge.
There's different levels to that. Of course, earlier on in pregnancy, at the first stages, the first 6 weeks, 4 weeks, sometimes the mother may not know she's pregnant. Very often she doesn't, until the first cycle completes and suddenly there's no period, and then we think, oh, it's just a little bit late, and then 5 weeks goes by and 6 weeks go by and we think, oh, better have a test. But if the mother is that unaware of her body that months and months have gone past, then we can begin to ask the question of how can that be, that we don't feel the changes, that she doesn't feel the changes. And then to me, that's it's a question of whether there's a trauma related to that. Disconnection from one's body is a very common survival strategy. I remember talking to a client of mine and she said, I feel in my body for the first time in decades. So most people are trying for out-of-body experiences with drugs, but Zero Balancing and other body work helps us have an in-body experience, perhaps for the first time in decades. So to not be in one's body, to be disconnected from one's body is a sign of trauma for me. But I think that if it is just that simple period, of course the fetus is just lying there in oceanic bliss, becoming aware of itself in a natural, calm environment of the mother, if she's not traumatized, then I think that's pretty healthy.
Okay. Should we try one more? There is one more question.
Yes, sure.
Okay. So our daughter has a scoliosis and exercises does not work because her muscles are too flexible. Is there anything you would advise to add to her treatment?
The people I've worked with scoliosis, and I've worked with people with severe scoliosis, Dr. Fritz Smith says, being an American, he says, don't try and straighten the Grand Canyon. Just get the river flowing through it. So when we've got all sorts of different shaped bodies, all of us have got different shaped bodies. We do this or we do that. And the scoliosis gives that strain on the muscles. But the people I've worked with, when you get the energy flowing through the skeletal system, the energy supports it. So working with scoliosis is so much about working with bone. So whether we're using bone in from yoga, Paul Cohen has developed bone yoga in New Zealand, and lots of yoga works on the skeletal system. Zero Balancing works on the skeletal system, and lots of other cranial sacral therapy works on the fluids in the skeletal system, which is a different aspect of bone. But I do think that it's not so much about trying to get rid of the scoliosis as about getting the energy flowing through it. And yoga is very specifically designed to get the energy of the moving up and down the spine, as well as Zero Balancing. And there are Zero Balancing practitioners throughout the world now, and associations in Mexico, in America, in the North America, in New Zealand, in Australia, in Switzerland, in the UK, to name but a few. Just look on the internet and you'll find it.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard, so much. We're approaching to the end of the session slowly, but I can see that people are just, you know, very grateful for what you said and what you shared with us. I personally found a tip, because I work with people also, just how this experience of hand can help me to actually hold my boundaries when being with someone. So that was also a strong one for me. I will just right now give a couple of announcements, and then I will come back to you with a question. What's your top tip on how to stay embodied? If you have a minute to think about that. And in the meantime, I'm sharing with you that we are still in the day 12. So there is one day cherish this conference and to use it to connect to people. So in a moment, there will be links. If you haven't copied Richard's website link, there it will be posted there. Also, remember about our page, web page on Facebook, that you can connect with other people there. You will find the link there. And I strongly encourage you to use coffee break rooms and go and connect personally, where you can see people and just reflect on what was happening and what is happening for you in this conference. And also, please remember that there is a possibility to own the whole library of all the beautiful sessions shared, like this one, during the conference. And you can do so by upgrading the account. You have still one day when it's a 50% discount, so it will double from tomorrow. And remember that there is a possibility to either own everything or a particular channel just for you to digest all the content that is here in your own time. So we can definitely do that. Okay, and the next session is with Patrick Cassidy, Evolution of Our Relationship to Conflict. So you can also check this one out in an hour. And Richard, back to you. What's your top tip on staying embodied?
Over the entrance to Delphi were the words, "Know thyself." And for me, doing the internal work and being kind to oneself while doing it, kind to one's inner perpetrator that perpetrates against yourself, the critical voice. Know thyself, be kind to thyself. That's my line.
Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you, Nora and Marta, for being there for me. It's lovely. And everyone else for coming along. It's a real delight to see so many supportive faces.
And we're right on the hour. Perfect.
Great. Okay. So, I'm going to go to the coffee room if anyone wants a chat. And that coffee room link is in the chat line there.
Bye, everyone.
Let's be kind to each other.
Bye. Let's be kind to each other.